Welcome to Local Talk, where we explore the people, stories, and events in Central Iowa. Thank you for listening in. We are your hosts today, Ursula Rudenberg and
Susan Franzen. Thank you for listening in. It's going to be hot. A sunny, hot, and windy weekend is predicted, with temperatures as high as 97 on Saturday and Sunday.
Also, you may have been noticing that the moon is getting bigger and bigger. I've been noticing it because I garden at night, and tonight, actually, technically today, is the full moon, known as the mini moon, or the mini strawberry moon. It's the smallest moon of the year. The moon's orbit around the Earth is actually not in a perfect circle, so some months the full moon is closer to our planet than it is other months, and in June the moon's orbit takes us furthest away from the Earth. The term strawberry moon is reportedly from indigenous people who called it this because June was the prime month for strawberry harvesting. In Europe, this full moon is often called the rose moon because roses bloom in June.
Here's another astronomy tip from the Farmer's Almanac. If you're looking at the full moon tonight and you spot a small object that appears to be a bright star with a yellow-white glow shining near the lower right side of the moon, that's the planet Saturn.
Saturn. We start with a moment of reflection on yesterday's hearing of the James Comey testimony before the Senate Intelligence Committee, which sometimes included interesting language, actually some impressive language. Some at KHOI are trained in literary history, so there was interest at the station when, during the Senate Intelligence Committee hearing, former FBI Director James Comey and Senator Angus King of Maine both made an analogy between President Trump's request to Comey to drop the investigation of Michael Flynn and a famous incident in British medieval history. The incident was in 1170 when King Henry II of Britain, exasperated by his rival, the Bishop of Canterbury, Thomas Becket, well-known figure, muttered to some of his followers, "Will no one rid me of this meddlesome priest?" His men took him at his word and lost no time in murdering Becket, who subsequently became a saint in the Catholic Church. It was an incident that has become enshrined in literary and religious history as well as its political history. And for some people, it has parallels to the presidential political situation currently. And thus it came up in the hearings. Kay Puttock is a retired English professor, and production manager Evan Taylor, who's with us here, has a master's degree in literature, and they submit their commentary. They call it the meddlesome priest.
James Comey was ready with a quotation, historical quotation, "Will no one rid me of this meddlesome priest," from Henry II, and Senator Angus King was right ready with the same thing and the date when this happened, which, of course, was to do with the murder of Thomas Becket in Canterbury Cathedral. Now, Evan, you're a literary person. What does this bring to your mind?
A number of things. In terms of actual literature, the murder of Thomas Becket in Canterbury Cathedral inspired several important literary pieces, including The Canterbury Tales by Chaucer, which is all about a pilgrimage to the tomb of Thomas Becket.
Yeah, it was one of the most popular pilgrimage sites, but there's nothing There's nothing in The Canterbury Tales about the actual murder.
About the actual murder, that's right. But it also did inspire the T.S. Eliot play Murder in the Cathedral,
right,
which is very much about the relationship between Thomas Becket and King Henry II.
Church and state, in other words. I mean, to me, this is the point of this quotation at this time. It's a classic example of when the king or the president or the person in power drops a gentle hint in the hearing of people he expects to do his bidding. He hopes sometimes that they will do his bidding, and then afterwards he has deniability. So when King Henry II said, "Will no one rid me of this meddlesome priest," his henchmen that heard that went and killed Thomas Becket, the priest, the Archbishop of Canterbury. Afterwards, he could say, "Well, I didn't really intend them to do that. It was just an angry remark at the moment." So it gives the person deniability. At the same time, he expects his faithful followers to do this.
And, of course, the motivation for having Becket murdered in the first place was that Becket was excommunicating his rivals within the church in order to strengthen his own grasp of power, which was something that King Henry II took great offense to.
Classic conflict between church and state, the head of the church and the head of the state now.
Of course, in the Comey incident, it has more to do, I suppose, with his meddling with Mike Flynn, for instance. There were a lot of things in the hearing, a lot of allusions to Trump saying things along the lines of, oh, well, you know, Mike's a great guy, you know, trying to get Comey to drop the investigation into Russian meddling in the election in the first place. Comey not doing that is what led to, I guess, perhaps his political assassination rather than, you know, maybe not literal, but his firing.
The question that prompted this quotation was, did you take that hint as a directive? And he said, brought to mind, will no one rid me of this meddlesome priest? And I'll let you act upon these hints that come from the top. But, you know, you should see a red light when you hear remarks like that.
Right. And then, of course, there's the further implication, too, that when Becket was murdered after the other monks prepared his body for burial, they found that under his vestments he was wearing a hair shirt. So he was serving his own sort of private penance, and he was then widely regarded as a martyr and eventually canonized. So Comey bringing up that quotation too, in a lot of ways, is perhaps a suggestion that history will eventually view him as a martyr as well for the cause of justice, as the case may be.
And this is Local Talk on K2I Community Radio. I'm Ursula Rudenberg. Lots of active minds at K2I, and you can imagine it's very interesting to be around the people here. Thank you, Kay Patak, and thank you, Evan Taylor. Adana Derigardel, event coordinator of the Main Street Cultural District, is here. You can't see her, so let me tell you, she always brings a bright light into the room whenever she comes to KHOI. Thanks for joining us, Adana.
Well, thank you for having me. I'm excited to be here.
You're one of the forces that make the 4th of July parade happen.
Yes, I am.
This is just a month away, and it's downtown here on Main Street.
Yes, it is. We start at Clark and Main, goes down and kind of loops around on Douglas, and then comes back, kind of ends at City Hall.
And the parade usually lasts, what, about an hour?
Hour's pretty good. Hour, maybe hour and a half.
Uh-huh. I just appreciate you stopping by for a minute, giving us an update on the 4th of July parade. Who will be the Grand Marshal this year?
This year, it's still a little secret. Yet to be revealed. He's a great guy, and we'll have a nice little story about him, and so pretty excited. We usually like to find them a wonderful, decorative, awesome car from, you know, an era maybe in the past.
At the front of the parade?
Yes, yes. Yep. Last year we had a wonderful gentleman who just was blown away the fact that he was a Grand Marshal, and that's always the feeling we want to get from somebody who wants to represent our Ames July 4th parade.
So how's it going this year?
So far this year, it's going great. I'm getting right now, I guess, per se, maybe 3 or 4 entries a day, which usually happens kind of towards the end, and I understand that. Uh-huh. You know, a lot of people are excited to get their floats ready or what they're going to do this year, and we've always got those groups that come every year and love it. The kids get so excited. It's the fun that kids have and seeing their smiles. That's kind of the best part.
So what was memorable about last year's parade?
It was a little larger than we anticipated, which is great, and I'll take that every year. Kind of took us by surprise that we needed a little extra feet than we thought. Kind of started to creep past Wheatsville. So this year we've got some things set up to make sure our staging is a little more, you know, we don't want to leak into the neighborhoods during the parade. So we got to be careful. But
so
it was
a
great
problem.
Thing. But
a
yeah,
good problem.
A good problem. Yes, I'll take that. It just kind of took us by surprise. We're like, oh my gosh, we're running out of room. But that's a good one to have.
Adana, you need volunteers, is that correct?
Yes, we do. Okay. Setting up the barricades that go out. We also have great little bags for the kids. Donated our sponsor this year is Duckworth Wearing, and they bought a ton of wonderful little bags for the kids to put their candy in this year, which is really helpful. We need volunteers to help hand those out right before the parade to all the kids. You'll get your own staging area and just make sure everybody's in order, kind of help us organize the parade lineup, as well as watching the barricades during the parade. A lot of people love doing because you're watching the parade at the same time. Mm-hmm. It's kind of a cheating deal. You're helping, but yet you are still watching the parade. We we want to be careful. We don't want kids hit, you know, by a car, for heaven's sake, or a float. They do. Mm-hmm. And understandable. They're little kids.
Well, there's candy out there.
Exactly. Sometimes it falls. This year, we decided to have a couple of security volunteers to just walk up and down and help watch the kids. Because it's going to happen. They're going to get so excited. But at least with some extra help to be there if a little kid goes running.
So who's qualified to be a volunteer?
We ask that you're, I would say, probably 16 and older at least, you know, but just somebody who wants to help the community.
Okay.
I mean, you know, it's volunteering. Give us a little of your time. We'd love it.
Do you need to get involved before the parade, or is there a training period, or you just show up the day of the parade if you're a volunteer?
I send out a email about a couple days before the event explaining everything. For 4th of July, there is a lot of reading that you need to understand, and I'm always open. I'll get phone calls on questions. But we always have you show up about a half an hour early than, you know, when you're scheduled to volunteer and just go over everything.
Okay.
You know, because, I mean, there are things you've got to be careful with, yes, but
it's
as long as you
to do.
Yes, it is. Okay. As long as you have the heart to want to do it, it'll be great and you'll love it.
Okay, so how do you volunteer?
For volunteering, we have you go to our website. It's aimsdowntown.org.
aimsdowntown.org.
Yes. And then there's the events tab up top. Click that, and then you'll find 4th of July. And then we have a little per se where you can click on. It says volunteers. Click here. And it'll take you to the site where you can sign up for whichever time or position that you would like. But it is an event where we do need a lot of volunteers. And if you can help, we would love that, and we would appreciate it.
And give the website one more time.
AimsDowntown.org.
Okay. Thank you.
Thank you.
Now, KHOI has been in the parade for many years.
Yes.
And this year, we're stepping up our game a little bit. We're partnering with the Maestri Cultural District to try and bring more music and color into the parade, showcase the community as much as possible, because that's what KHOI is focused on. We're looking to bring in artists, bands, musicians, performers, and any community participants that want to be in the parade. So there's lots of ways to get involved. We're interested in representation from a large variety of culture and different backgrounds and ethnicities of people that make up this community. Also just cultural groups. We are looking for folks to contact us, and the best way to contact us is to go to our website, khoifm.org, and you'll find our phone number there and our address. Or you can email khoiradio@gmail.com. We're looking for some people to carry banners. We're also looking for people who want to make some beautiful banners for the parade. We'll be doing a banner making workshop on the 29th of June. That's Thursday night. That's June 29th from 5 to 10 p.m. here at 410 Douglas at KHOI Radio. So if you are an artist or you would like to just help make a banner, we'll have artists here to help you as well. We just want to bring some beautiful images to the parade. So again, that's the banner making workshop for the parade on June 29th, Thursday from 5 to 10 p.m. at KHOI Radio. We're also looking for bands. Any band that wants to march in the parade will be able to march for free. The Main Street Cultural District is waiving the fee for that if you contact KHOI, and we'll find a place in the parade for your band that fits. We also ourselves are putting together a community band. So if you have children who want to be part of Pots and Pans Band, or if you are a child at heart, come and join the Pots and Pans Band. Also, if you're a musician who can come and help lead the Pots and Pans Band, especially if you're a percussionist or horn player, please contact us, because you can help the rest of us who are not musicians sound good. We are looking for bands. We're looking for people to be part of the Pots and Pans percussion section. We're looking for banner makers and banner carriers. We're also looking, if you're a dancer and feel that you can add to the festivities with dancing, please contact us. Also, we're going to have a radio band, which means that we need people to carry radios in the parade. So if you are not a musician and don't want to be part of the percussion section, please consider carrying a radio for us, and you will be carrying the music. KHOI will be broadcasting the music over the radio, so it'll give a tune to the Pots and Pans Band. So there's lots of ways you can get involved with that as well, and the best way to do that is to email us at khoiradio@gmail.com. We'll also be putting a link on our website homepage probably today, where you can sign up through the website. And Adana Della Gardel is here from the Main Street Cultural District who are leading this effort. We're just trying to help them. Donna, before you leave, just say one more time how somebody can volunteer with you to help with kind of monitoring and managing the parade.
We would love many volunteers. Just go to our website, amesdowntown.org, and there's a tab that says events, and then you'll find 4th of July. And on that page, you'll find where to enter the parade. There's a tab there, as well as where to volunteer. It says click here, and it sends you right to our wonderful sign-up page, and we'd love to have you.
Thank you for coming in.
And thank you so much.
Looking forward to the parade.
Yes.
This is Local Talk on KHOI Community Radio. I'm Ursula Rudenberg, hosting here with Susan Franson. On Saturday, tomorrow, June 10th, hundreds of Iowans will be coming to Ames, to the Iowa State Senate's Scheman Building, to attend the Iowa Working Families Summit.
Sue Dinsdale, Story County resident, on the steering committee of the Working Families Summit, is one of the organizers. Welcome to Local Talk, Sue.
Thank you.
Thank you for coming by to explain what the Working Family Summit is.
Sure, I'm glad to do that. This is a continuation of a summit that we had 2 years ago, and now we're hoping to have this every year. It is a huge coalition of organizations, including labor, different community organizations. A couple that I work with is Iowa Citizen Action Network and the Iowa Alliance for Retired Americans. We also have Progress Iowa, the ACLU.
So it's a coalition of many organizations.
I think there are about 50 organizations that are co-sponsoring the event and working on it.
And the theme of this year's summit is Standing Together, Fighting Back. And the conference also is being advertised as finding new ways to bring this country back to those that make it work.
Exactly right.
And there's also going to be a panel discussion whose title is From the Ground Up, Growing Iowa's Resistance. So there is definitely a theme here of resistance and responding to something. Can you explain what the resistance is against?
What we're hearing from hundreds of everyday Iowans and Americans is that they are feeling powerless right now, that there are a lot of outside interest groups that are helping to shape our legislation here at the state level. So we have brought together different folks who have done grassroots organizing. For example, we have Megan Flynn, who is a young woman that helped organize the Women's March in Des Moines. She had a spark lit and then a fire bloomed, and she was one of the organizers for that. We have teachers, we have parents, We have people from that work on worker justice issues, and they'll be doing a panel discussion in the morning talking about that. It's, like I said, I think people are feeling powerless sometimes in the face of what's going on, and this is just a way to bring people together, let them know they're not alone, and give them some tools to do effective advocacy on behalf of their cause.
When you say what's going on, you referred earlier about outside influences. Can you be a little bit more clear about what you mean by what's going on?
Sure. I think we saw in the Iowa legislature this year that there were, I call it bill in a box. A lot of the legislation that came through seemed like it came through the Americans for Prosperity. If you look at their website, you could basically see what they advocate for and what was coming up in the legislature.
So you're saying that the legislature was following a pre-planned agenda that wasn't necessarily from Iowa?
Exactly. I didn't see my legislators or any of them actually campaigning on taking away workers' rights or stopping county control of minimum wage. I saw them campaigning on making it a better place for all Iowans. And at the end of the session, it didn't seem like that is what had happened.
So when you say taking away workers' rights, are you referring to the disabling of the collective bargaining?
Yes. Yep, that would be one big thing.
And the workers' compensation being hindered?
Yes. And then, you know, the women's rights issues, too, and the reproductive health. Mm-hmm. I mean, there were just a lot of things that happened that left many of us feeling really disappointed and wanting a way to be able to talk to our legislator or make our voice heard.
During the summit, it sounds like there'll be discussion about actual legislative action that was taken in the past year and what that means to people.
Yes, there will.
And then also there's a general sense of disempowerment that you're articulating?
Right. I think people just need to know how to advocate, and whether it's how to talk to your legislator, how to write a letter, what the issues are, and kind of drilling down on what that means for you.
It would be helpful, maybe, if we talk to someone who is in a working family.
Sure.
This is Eric Winkie.
Eric is on the phone. Hi, Eric. Thanks for joining us.
You're welcome.
Eric, where are you?
I live in Cambridge. I'm at my house right now.
Okay. Thanks for joining us by phone.
Yeah, you're welcome.
Let's just hear your story, Eric.
The company that I work for a large biotech company. In the last year or so, they've been going through some reorganization and downsizing. And my group was part of that reorganization where we had to downsize several people from our group. I was fortunate enough to not lose my position within the company, but there were a couple of my coworkers that did. And so it was, you know, an unfortunate time for them and the uncertainty of what they're going to be able to do and what's available for them on the outside, not working for this company anymore. On top of that, my wife was working with the same company in a different department, but she was working as a contract employee, so she didn't have some of the same benefits that I had, even if I would have lost my position with the company. So what was she going to do? She was able to, fortunately, find something before she lost her position, but at the same time, there was a lot of uncertainty there. And then we have a small child that's in daycare at the time, so, you know, just making sure that everything was going to be taken care of if something bad had happened with our positions.
You have concerns about the security of your family.
Anybody that's working that has children that is not financially secure because they don't have lots of money. If you're working to pay for your child care, to get health insurance, all these things, that's a major concern.
Eric, what kind of solutions do you look for?
I was fortunate enough, I'm not in a bad position where I'm fighting to try to figure out what I'm going to do next, but I would say having things in place that would help people, especially in a situation where you did end up losing your job for some reason, because you hear about all these people that lose their jobs and then are searching for months and months trying to find a position, and just they're having a hard time finding it, whether that's, you know, some sort of way to continue an education if they wanted to maybe branch out into something else, whether it's some sort of, I know we have the Iowa Workforce Development, maybe making sure that everybody knows how to find these opportunities to get in find more potential solutions to any of the issues they're having, trying to find better work.
Is this type of situation going to be discussed at the Working Family Summit?
We'll have, along with the panel, we have lots of workshops going on. And one will be on how to fight for affordable health care. Public education is an important issue. It sounds like it will be for you too, Eric, with a young one. Raising wages. And, you know, one thing that we're doing there is we're going to run a session on how to run for local office. You know, when we think about elected officials, we think about the president or the Senate or our legislators, but really it's your local school board, your mayor. Those sorts of offices, too, can have a deep impact on what happens with working families.
Well, one of the things I noticed on your list is support for pregnant workers. And, of course, we don't even talk about family leave. Did your wife, what did she do when she was pregnant? Was she able to continue working?
Yeah, she was. So she was working through a contract agency, and so she was able to take the time off and come back. That wasn't an issue, but she did it without pay because there was no pay benefit with that.
Actually, one of the sessions that we're having is on winning progressive legislation, and it's focusing on pregnant workers' rights. We have the Policy Council for the ACLU of Iowa coming in to talk about a bill that would require reasonable accommodations for pregnant employees. You know, I had someone contact me wondering who they talked to. They worked for a place where they did have some physical activity and were really just having to take off vacation time, sick leave time, because they couldn't make the accommodations for this woman to continue her job. And it's just not right.
Sue, I also noticed the keynote speaker will be Larry Cohen.
Yes.
Who is the labor chair of Our Revolution.
Right.
What is Our Revolution?
Our Revolution was born out of the Bernie Sanders movement, just advocating for working people. Larry Cohen is a wonderful speaker and is a fighter for all Americans. He was with the Communications Workers of America as the national president. And now he's working on the labor issues through Our Revolution. The Bernie Sanders campaign, love it or hate it, really opened a lot of people's eyes to the issues that are facing everyday Americans. And a lot of to do with the wealth disparity and those sorts of things. And so I'm sure Larry will give us some great insight into that.
Okay.
Everything that you're talking about wanting to do, they're all definitely very important things to make sure that we're always working towards. It's always finding the right balance of how you do that with balancing everything else at the same time. But it's definitely worthwhile to always be talking about ways to make sure that families have everything they need to make sure that they feel safe and secure.
Come on down and join us tomorrow. It's going to be a hot day. It'll be cool at Iowa State.
So give us the specifics.
Sure. It's at the Scheman Center on the Iowa State campus. Registration begins at 9. The program begins at 10. We will have the workshops, the panel discussion. We have a free lunch for people. I'm going to wrap up the day, so I'll send people out.
Where does registration happen?
Right there at the Scheman Center. Just come on in.
But you also have a website, right?
Oh, yes, and you can go ahead and register online if you'd like to now, and it's www.iowaworkingfamilies.com.
Iowaworkingfamilies.com.
Right.
We're speaking with Sue Dinso with the Working Family Summit.
Yes.
Sue, any last words? You're with the steering committee for this summit.
Sure. We are going to make this an annual event. I believe next year's event will be May 19th, so you can mark your calendars now. And we just will be keeping our eyes on what's happening in our state and in our country and hoping to help working families.
And the summit is essentially a combination between workshops and lectures. So part of it is educational and part of it is hands-on learning?
Exactly, yep.
Okay. So there'll be a lot of different workshops on topics covering anything from healthcare to public education, minimum wage.
Water quality, running for office. Yep.
Running for office, pregnant workers' rights, right. As Susan mentioned. Thank you so much for stopping by.
Thanks
and letting
for having
us know.
Me.
big dipper, we are washed by the very same rain. We are swimming in the stream together, some in power and some in pain. We can worship this ground we walk on, cherishing the beings that we live beside. Loving spirits will live forever, we're all swimming to the other side. I am alone, I am searching, hungering for answers in my time. I am balanced at the brink of wisdom, I'm impatient to receive a sign. I move forward with my senses open, imperfection to be my crime. In humility I will listen, we're all swimming to the other side. We are living in the great big dipper, we are washed by the very same rain. We are swimming in the stream together, some in power and some in pain. We can worship this ground we walk on, cherishing the beings that we live beside. Loving spirits will live forever, we're all swimming to the other side. On this journey through thoughts and feelings, binding intuition, my head, my heart, I am gathering the tools together, I'm preparing to do my part. All of those who've come before me, band together and be my guide. Loving lessons that I will follow, we're all swimming to the other side. We are living beneath the great big dipper, we are washed by the very same rain. We are swimming in the stream together, some in power and some in vain. We can worship this ground we walk on, cherishing the beings that we live beside. Loving spirits will live forever, we're all swimming to the other side. Since life's beginning, and we never noticed they were there. We can balance at the brink of wisdom, never recognizing that we've arrived. Loving spirits will live together, we're all swimming to the other side. We are living in the great big dipper, we are washed by the very same rain. We are swimming in the stream together, some in power and some in pain. We can worship this ground we walk on, cherishing the beings that we live beside. Loving spirits will live forever, we're all swimming to the other side. Loving spirits will live forever.
Tomorrow, rallies will be held around the country. Paris Climate Accord marches, calling for mayors to sign onto the mayor's agreement pledging to honor the Paris Agreement. 211 mayors had signed an agreement to promote clean energy in their towns, in their cities. These marches are to try to get more mayors to sign on with the 211. We have a demonstration right here in Ames in front of City Hall. This will be at 2 p.m.
On Saturday.
Yes, on Saturday. Ames Mayor Campbell responded to the demonstration plans by pointing out that Ames is among the 1,000 cities whose mayors have signed the U.S. Mayor's Climate Protection Agreement. She has been a signatory since 2007. Mary Rankin is here from the Office of Sustainability. She's joined us for her monthly check-in. Mary?
the mayor's been a signatory for a number of years in something that makes good sense for our community, and now we're certainly seeing makes good sense as a country in consideration of the recent activities with the Paris Agreement.
Is there anything going on campus?
Campus is a little slower this time of the year because many of our students are all over, in fact, the world doing wonderful things. But certainly the consideration of the U.S. decision to pull out at that country level is of concern and of interest on campus. So there's a lot of discussion about it. The Daily just recently did an article interviewing a number of different people on that. And I would say that there's a lot of awareness, a lot of interest, and certainly a lot of involvement in an individual level, contacting different folks in our legislature and that sort of thing.
Now, you actually work for the city as well in the area of sustainability.
The city has shown a considerable amount of progressive action in sustainability, particularly even in bringing, you know, my contracted position on as a sustainability coordinator. Certainly that's not across the board in cities around the country. And also I've always found in my work with the city, I've been doing it for a few years now in this shared position, that we continue to be very aware and very proactive in considering what makes good sense for our community, what we should be involved in, when we should be involved in it, and how. And it isn't necessarily a broad stroke, you know, that everybody's involved in the same way or at the same time or to the same level. And I think the city has been very considerate and proactive and thoughtful related to that. And also that, you know, sustainability has all those different facets of sustainability, and really all those, the environmental, the economic, and the social components of sustainability really have to come together collectively toward that sustainable future that I know mm-hmm. the mayor certainly is very concerned about and considerate of, and we as a community obviously want that to be.
Part of the reason why you're here in this position is to kind of break that down in terms of how that actually works on a bit-by-bit level during the city on how you actually implement green activity and sustainability.
Exactly.
Well, Joshua Thompson, Parks and Facilities Superintendent, is with us here.
I did right again. Down. He's my guest again.
Welcome, Joshua.
Well, thanks for having me.
This is the time. I mean, all of our trees are, you know, budded out. We can see the leaves. It's just beautiful to see the green on our trees again. And with that in mind, I think the consideration of looking at trees, considering their health, and also noticing that, you know, maybe there are fewer trees in some areas than there were last spring. And so in our recent city side, the June edition, actually, it talked about where is the process related to ash tree removal.
I noticed on University Boulevard, there's trees have been marked and disappearing.
Yeah, that's been part of our ash tree removal program. If you look at that Stuart Smith part, I believe you're talking about. Mm-hmm. And out of all the trees in that park, there was initially over 120 ash trees that were in that park. And with the onset of emerald ash borer in the state and has been identified in Story County, it's been on our radar to preemptively take care of some of those issues before they become a major problem.
And what percentage is that then, the 120 trees you mentioned in Stuart Smith?
In that park?
Just in that park.
Over a third of those trees were ash trees.
Right. So. And so, you know, I am just referring to this city side article, which for those of you who think it's just filler in your electric bills, it really has very valuable information. But anyway, the goal for communities is about a 10% amount that one species would have, correct, to get optimal diversity. And we're at 16%.
Correct. And, you know, and also just another tree that people need to be aware of. It's a beautiful tree when they change colors in the fall is a maple tree. People may not understand, you know, that there's over – and just in the right-of-way trees, which we have over 15,000 right-of-way trees in the city, 26% of those are maples. Mm-hmm. So, you know, you think about the ash trees. We only have 16% of those. Just
right.
Think if we have a disease and
exactly.
That could potentially damage the maple trees. That's mm-hmm. even more. You know, and people look back you know, to the 1970s when we had mm-hmm. Dutch elm disease
mm-hmm.
and the detriment and the how many trees were diseased because of that.
Yeah, many of the streets in Ames were actually tunnels
right.
under the trees. I
right.
remember that vividly.
Oh, yeah.
And it was so startling when all of a sudden all those trees were gone.
Yeah, and, you know, with this issue, we're trying to diversify our tree canopy so we don't have that issue ever again.
Mm-hmm.
And that's why we're trying to get on top of this this emerald ash borer or these ash trees to make sure they don't become a hazard in the future. So.
Right. And obviously they're being replaced.
Correct.
So
yes.
It's not that we're losing a canopy. We're just diversifying.
Yeah, and the trees may not be replaced in the exact same location
sure.
where an ash tree was. It has to make sense.
Of course.
So you were talking about diversifying as a good thing. What are preferred species to add to the menu, so to speak, of trees?
So in the right-of-way, for trees for the right-of-way, I'm talking in between, you know, the back of curb and the sidewalk. We have a street tree list, current street tree list, that's on the City of Ames website. People can search for that on there. And it, you know, we are focused on having a lot of – we would like to have a lot of native trees. But there's other trees on there that aren't necessarily native to the state of Iowa. But like, you know, a hackberry tree. And it all depends on the location of, you know, how wide is the right-of-way in that area? You know, certain trees make sense. Others don't make sense. But, hackberry, oak trees, there's actually some Dutch elm-resistant elm trees that are out on the market now that we've actually planted those in our right-of-ways. And they're very, very nice trees. London plane trees. Some other different trees like a black gum and a sweet gum are other trees that we have planted into our right-of-ways. Yeah.
Yeah, that's great. I'm excited to see this diversity. I love to see diversity amongst all of our different species. I think it makes neighborhoods more unique, and certainly it adds to our natural diversity. And that assists for all the other species that depend upon these trees as well.
Correct. You know, and I want to give a credit to the Ames Foundation. They have gotten 100% of behind the issue of getting diversifying our tree canopy. With the ash trees have been removed, they have done a fundraising plan and a planting plan to donate trees for this cause. And you know, last fall and this spring, they both of those times they did a planting day, and in both of those days they planted over 100 trees.
Wow.
In the right of way. So that's a big effort, and you know, I think thanks to the community who have donated towards those cause.
Sure.
Towards that cause.
Sure.
And the issue of climate change, that planting trees is very important because, of course, they trap carbon.
Absolutely.
But they are very important, and it's important worldwide, planting trees.
Oh, most definitely. Trees are vital to our existence.
Well, and not just, you know, there's so many other benefits as well, not just the trapping of the carbon, but, you know, they suck up stormwater, or they suck up rainwater. They shield and shade houses in the summertime, you know, to reduce cooling costs. So there's so many benefits of trees.
Yeah, which is particularly timely because I know we're coming up on a very warm weekend, and I know Electric Services is certainly going to be interested to see how demand is spiking. So having those trees in place, planting them with the plan of what they can do in the future is very important as we as homeowners and residents start making our own plans and making our decisions.
Most definitely.
We're speaking with Joshua Thompson, Superintendent of Parks and Recreation Facilities.
Correct.
And Mary Rankin with the Office of Sustainability, both at the city and the university.
Correct, yes.
And we're basically reviewing the transition of trees, where Ames is losing a lot of ash trees, but also diversifying the new trees that come in. Before we go, we have to take note of that tree that I think everybody in Ames knows, which is the sycamore tree that's sitting at the corner of Lincoln Way and University Boulevard. Are you planting more sycamore trees?
Yeah, and that's one thing I forgot to mention is that we've planted a lot of sycamores in the last few years, especially in our park system, because they're very fast growing and they're a native tree.
They're native.
And they just do really well in our climate.
They're so beautiful.
Yeah.
With the silver leaves, when I was young, we always called them the money trees because they look like they have coins on their branches. Well, thank you so much for coming in. Any final words you want to say, Mary?
Well, what Joshua and I were just talking about before we came is that with the warmer weather, the new trees that are planted, the new trees that residents are planting, we want to make sure and nurture them, keep them watered, keep them supported so that they can grow and be that wonderful diversified canopy that we want.
So trees need water too.
Absolutely.
Exactly.
And as they're established, you think, oh, they're fine. But no, they need it as well.
And it may be 1 to 2 to 3 years that the individuals may have to water those. So just to keep an eye on them and take care of them.
And speaking of water, the City of Ames Park and Recreation put out a notice saying that due to they don't have enough lifeguards. So they've had to reduce the hours at the municipal pool temporarily to adjust to this. So for your information, beginning on Monday, June 12th, lap swimming will only be offered from noon until 1 p.m. And there'll be updates on the Furman Aquatic Center available at basically the Ames Parks and Recreation Facebook page, which you want to go to Furman Aquatic Center on Facebook. There is a phone number, 239-5434, 239-5434, if you want to find out about the hours for the pools. And if you're interested in being a lifeguard, you must be 15, but the city is hiring. And to find out more about being a lifeguard, go to cityofames.org/jobs. And this is Local Talk, and we've been speaking with Mary Rankin from the Ames and ISU Office of Sustainability and Joshua Thompson, Ames Parks and Facilities Superintendent. Thank you for coming. Please come again. We'll see you again next month.
Yes, absolutely.
Phenology is noting nature's happenings when they occur. The first hepatica of spring or the last osprey of autumn are written in a journal for future reference. Today's phenology is about fissures in Iowa. Recently, a fissure was documented in northeast Iowa. The last they resided in Iowa was 1850s. Fissures are a forest mammal weighing about 5 pounds. They are members of the mustelid family that includes mink and otters. Fissures are larger than our mink and smaller than their larger cousin, the river otter. The fissure is found only in North America. Historically, it ranged the northern forests of Canada and the United States, as well as forests in the Appalachian, Rocky, and Pacific Coast Mountains. Today, fissures are found only in parts of their historic range. In the United States, they exist in portions of the Appalachian Mountains from New England south to Tennessee, northern Wisconsin, Minnesota, and Michigan's Upper Peninsula. Fissures eat snowshoe hares, rabbits, rodents, and birds, and are one of the few specialized predators of porcupines. Fissures are effective hunters, but are also known to eat insects, nuts, and berries when their prey is not available. Fissures prefer large areas of dense, mature coniferous or mixed forests and are solitary animals. They are mainly nocturnal, but may be active during the day. They travel many miles along ridges in search of prey, seeking shelter in hollow trees, logs, rock crevices, and dens of other animals. Recently, a trail cam in far northeast Iowa took an image of a fissure. A second animal was reported recently also. This is an amazing discovery from a critter that has not been in Iowa for decades. The last reports go back to the 1850s in Iowa. A few years ago, an Anishinaabe woman from northern Minnesota, Winona LaDuke, provided an interesting observation. Ms. LaDuke was presenting at Iowa State. She framed her remarks from the standpoint that Iowa State University has a long and distinguished legacy of wildlife conservation. She shared a story from her grandfather in Canada. He had invited his granddaughter to accompany him on his trap line that autumn. Now, this trap line had once been traversed by his grandfather all the way back to great-great-great, you get the picture, great-grandfathers. The trap line had been in her family for eons, possibly thousands of years. Each trapper had endured varying cycles of nature, and her grandfather related to her that the marten, which is a cousin to the fisher, were migrating that year. Winona thought that interesting. Then her grandfather said, "They move west every 70 years." So in the United States, at best, wildlife research has been noted since European settlement in the 1830s or so. I'm mainly recording what dates animals were no longer present. Only during the 1930s has there been wildlife research dollars that could research population trends and wildlife cycles. Nowhere in modern literature is there a reference to a 70-year marten migration west. So the information of marten moving west every 70 years are included with oral traditional stories with indigenous knowledge. So maybe Iowa is poised to see more fishers if, like their marten cousins, they migrate west every 70 years. Iowans will live and learn and do well to listen to indigenous knowledge from those that came before. This is Pat Schlarbaum, and that's a phenology for today. And like the environment that requires sustainable funding to ensure future generations enjoy our natural resources of Iowa, community radio, KHOI, requires sustainable funding. Please consider a basic membership of $55 per year, or better yet, consider joining the growing ranks of Friends of KHOI and become a sustaining member at $250 per year. It is a wise investment in our news that matters. You're listening to KHOI Community Radio 89.1, Story City, Ames. Take care.
And Susan, you want to take us out?
You have been listening to Local Talk on KHOI. Thank you for being with us. We have been your hosts for this hour, Susan Franzen and Ursula Rudenberg. Thank you for joining us.
And early in the show, we heard from Adana Della Gardell from the Ames Street Cultural District and Sue Dinsdale from the Iowa Working Family Summit and Eric
Winky.
Yeah. Many thanks to Kay Puttock and Evan Taylor for their literary commentary at the beginning of the show. And Local Talk is engineered by Evan Taylor, who is here today. And our theme song, as always, is Backtrackin' by Tom Richards and Al Harris from their CD, The Ballad of Kate Shelley. We also heard the Hungry March Band from New York City and Swimming to the Other Side by Emma's Revolution.
Local Talk airs at 7 a.m., noon, and 7 p.m. here on KHOI at 89.1 FM. Also, remember that you can hear KHOI live online at khoifm.org. You will also find recordings of this show on our homepage as soon as our webmaster is able to post it, with links to guests and information you heard on the program. We've made a recent change in our morning schedule. We are now airing Democracy Now! From 8 to 9 a.m. Morning Masterpieces will return at 9 a.m. We have made this change in light of the rapidly changing events in the national news. We want to provide you with the latest news in the most timely fashion.
So remember that you, the listener, are what makes KHOI meaningful and possible. Thank you for listening, and
we'll see you again on the radio.
Funding for KHOI is made possible in part by the Ames Chamber of Commerce. In the heart of Ames, the Ames Main Street Farmers Market brings local food and fun. Located between the 300 and 400 blocks of Main Street, including Tom Evans Plaza, the Farmers Market provides fresh local fruits, veggies, meats, breads, handcrafted goods, live music, and family entertainment every Saturday.